is going back to the Final Four.
Jason Hayward is dealing with
a bee or something.
Some insects.
Lon Kruger and the Oklahoma Sooners going to the Final Four.
Pino swings and rips this out to right field. A two-run home run by Robinson Cano. And it's gone for a home run. It's gone, a three-run homer day for Robinson Cano.
And the Orange have pulled off an Easter Sunday miracle for the H's. They beat top seed Virginia 68-62.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the all-new Sports Report Podcast with Brad Lynn and Clay Schrader here on Tiki Allen Radio and TikiAllenRadio.com. Clay, what's going on, buddy?
Been a rough day. Been a rough couple of days. I had a little bit of a stomach virus, but I'm cool, Clay.
You guys, Clay's been ill in the last couple of days, hasn't felt 100%. So how about we give him some cheers for coming on the show and fighting through the pain?
I feel a lot better today, but yesterday was rough. It's one of those days I couldn't keep anything down. You ever had one of those? You can't even keep water down. I don't want to gross anybody out or nothing.
It is close to dinner time, so.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, Clay, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for fighting through the pain. I know you haven't felt good the last couple of days. Hope you're feeling better. Maybe tonight will be a better night for you, and certainly I hope it's a better night for everyone out there listening to the Sports Report Podcast. Now, remember, you can check out replays of each and every show on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Audioboom. You can also check us out on Facebook and Twitter, The Sports Report, and on Twitter, it's at TIR Sports Report. Check out all the news updates you need to know for your teams, maybe your favorite league. We'll try our best to keep up with the circling news each and every day. It changes. Crazy thing about sports, Clay, is that it's always something happening.
No matter what time of year, nearly every sport, there's something happening.
And the best thing about this time of year, of course, it's March Madness. And, Clay, we finally have our Final Four teams. We had the Elite Eight games last weekend. And now it's clear who our last four teams are going to be. And that was the Syracuse Orange being the first 10 seed, Clay, to ever reach the Final Four.
I got to eat some crow. I mean, you know, I didn't even think Syracuse belonged in the tournament. And, I mean, they're playing great defense. They obviously got a lot of talent. They got a good coach. You know, it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. I mean, they are Syracuse, but still, you know, they just had a mediocre season. But the way they're playing defense is pretty phenomenal. It's going to be an interesting game against North Carolina. You got to like the Tar Heels, the way they're playing. I think they're playing the best basketball of anybody. Got to give it to Jim Boeheim and that staff for pulling through. And despite all the haters saying they didn't belong, you know, they've really played good in this tournament.
What's funny, Clay, is I was going back, and I actually watched a little bit of this game, and it was in the first half. Virginia was up big, and I'm thinking, you know, no, there's not many teams out there that are left that have played better basketball down the stretch than Virginia. Yeah. I was thinking, you know what, they're a lock. They're going to get past Syracuse. It's going to be a fun matchup in the Final Four, and they get beat by the Syracuse. They actually erase a 16-point deficit and stifle that defense, and, man, they came out with a big win. And they're going to have a pretty nice matchup going on in the Final Four when they take on North Carolina, the only one seed remaining.
And North Carolina's playing some really good basketball. They took care of Notre Dame with relative ease. They pulled away. North Carolina, they're a team that gets a lot of shots up. They get a lot of second chance points, and they make you pay. It'll be interesting to see. It's kind of going to be an offense versus defense kind of game. I think Syracuse, if they want to win, the game needs to stay in the 60s. Maybe the low 70s, but if the game gets in the upper 70s or in the 80s, North Carolina Notre Dame game, then you know that wouldn't be good news to Syracuse. So I think Syracuse needs to keep it kind of a lower scoring game.
Just a recap of the Elite Eight games that took place: Oklahoma comes out with a 12-point win over the Oregon Ducks, who had a great run with that number one seed, making it to the Elite Eight. But the Sooners and Buddy Hield, I told you, Clay, Buddy Hield is one of the best players in the country this year. He's been named today as one of the unanimous votes for a player being named to the All-American team. And he actually had a huge game, had 37 points to carry the Sooners. Villanova came up with a huge win over number one seed Kansas, knocked them off 64-59.
We mentioned
Syracuse knocking off Virginia, and Notre Dame falling to number one seed North Carolina. So, Clay, let's go ahead and just pick one of these games to talk about real quick and kind of recap what we saw in that matchup and what we can look from this team in the Final Four. And that's going to be the first game is Oklahoma and Oregon. Did you see anything from Buddy Hield or Oklahoma that would make you think that they have what it takes to advance on to the national championship game?
Yeah, well, I know Buddy is the best player on this team, but he's got a great supporting cast around him too. I mean, the game was really over at halftime. Just phenomenal shooting. You know, they nearly scored 50 points. I mean, what was it, 48-30 at halftime? I mean, it's hard to beat a team when they're hot. And Oregon, I mean, is Oregon as hot as they were against Duke in the previous round? Oklahoma was just that much hotter. I mean, it was crazy. But yeah, both these teams were really talented NBA, with some multiple NBA players. Oklahoma just had slightly more talent, and I think they're a little bit better coach. You know, Ron Kruger's been there for a while. He's been around the block. It just looked like Oklahoma was the team that, you know, had been there before. But yeah, it was a great game. Buddy Hield with another great game. I guess he's the best player in this tournament. I mean, what do you think?
He's got to be, man. Only one left for me. There's been a ton of players. We're talking about Brandon Ingram, who could potentially, you know, take over that number one draft pick from Simmons this year. We'll see where it gets to. Obviously, Simmons' stock went down this season. But you had Valentine from Michigan State. I think you have Hild and you have Bryce Johnson from North Carolina. Those are probably the best two players remaining in the Final Four. Yeah. And probably the best, two of the best players in the Elite Eight. And it's nice to have them in the Final Four. And who knows, me could even have that matchup in championship.
The difference in this game was three-point shooting. Oklahoma was hot from three-point land. They were 12 of 24. Oregon was cold from three-point land. There's only 4 of 21. So Oregon's hot shooting kind of that they had against Duke, we didn't really show up as much against Oklahoma, and that was the difference. Oklahoma was just lights out from the field, nearly 50%. And it's hard to beat a team that shoots 50% from three.
And Clay, my pick for the national championship and the overall number one seed, Kansas Jayhawks, they went down to one of your favorite teams, Villanova and Jay Wright. They advanced on to the Final Four. Can you tell me a little bit about that game?
I got to give Villanova credit. It was an ugly defensive game. You know, it was in the 60s. Kansas was cold. You know, Kansas, it may have been one of those games for Kansas, you know, saying, you know, we kind of beat ourselves, but give Villanova credit. They played good defense, forced turnovers. Kansas had 16 turnovers to 9. Neither team shot very well. Both teams, you know, didn't shoot very well from three. It was just kind of an ugly game, but Nova came out, got on top of them early, had a big lead first half, you know, a pretty good lead at halftime, 7-point lead, and they were able to hang on and gut out a kind of ugly game. But, hey, a win's a win. And a great job by Jay Wright and that staff, you know, finally busting through and making it back to the Final Four for the first time since 2009. I was surprised, I'll be honest with you. That's the way it goes sometimes.
Pretty special to have Villanova back and Jay Wright, like you mentioned.
Yes.
And to knock off the number one overall seed, Kansas and Bill Self, that's quite an accomplishment, and you got to think they're going to be riding high on confidence heading into the Final Four.
Both teams shot bad from three-point land. Both teams shot bad from the field. It wasn't really a great game. Not all of them had to be pretty. I mean, sometimes it's good to have a defensive game, you know what I mean? It wasn't just unbearable, but, you know, it is what it is. Give Villanova credit. To beat a number one overall seed, sometimes you have to make it an ugly game, and that's what Villanova did.
You mentioned defense with that game right there, and this next game right here featured just that, and this was a Syracuse team who pressed the heck out of Virginia. And in the second half there, they caused turnover after turnover, and they used that to carry themselves over that 16-point deficit, and they get a big win, 68-62. Do you think we'll see Syracuse be able to keep that Cinderella slipper on? Will it still fit in the Final Four, or do you think it'll be kind of getting a little tight?
I don't know. Why I keep doubting them? I mean, who thought they'd come back? You know, they were down 14 at halftime. Who thought there was a chance they'd come back? They came back. They scored nearly 50 in the second half. After only scoring 21 in the first half, they scored 47 in the second half. You know, I guess Syracuse has just kind of been all year, just kind of an up-and-down team. I don't know. It's hard to pick against them, honestly, at times, the way that they keep proving me wrong. They've been proving me wrong since the first round. But yeah, it's going to be hard to pick them against, you know, a good North Carolina squad. But Virginia, man, if there was one team in this tournament that you would feel good about having a double-digit lead in the second half, it would be Virginia. That was the real story of this game, is that it wasn't just that Syracuse came back and beat a team, you know, being, you know, down double digits at halftime, down double digits in the second half. It's the fact that it was a Virginia team that just seemed so consistent, so good on the defensive end, to just collapse. It was really surprising to me.
And the team, Clay, that they'll be facing in the next round in the Final Four, of course, we mentioned, is the North Carolina Tar Heels. They get a big win. This was the game that never felt close. We mentioned that Virginia was up 14 at halftime over Cuse, But this game, it just never really seemed like that crazy matchup that came down to the very end like all these other matchups seem to do, except for maybe for Oklahoma and Oregon. That was kind of out of the way, and they got some late buckets to make it seem not as bad as it was. But North Carolina gets a big win. They win by 14. They score almost 100 points. They get 88 out of it. I got to think they're going to be riding high as well, and they're probably playing them. To me, just from what I've seen so far in the tournament, them and Oklahoma have been playing the best basketball when it comes to going out there and just dominating the other team.
Yeah, it was only a five-point game at halftime, but it felt like it was Notre Dame had no chance to me. I don't know if it felt like that to you, too, but it felt like it was a 15- or 20-point game. Notre Dame would just seem like they were just trying. They tried to make it an ugly, low-scoring game, you know, hold the ball, work the shot clock down, and, you know, try and find one or two good shots. And North Carolina, you know, they were just playing ball out there. They've got a good shot. They're going to take it. And, you know, they're going to get second chances, and they're going to – seem like North Carolina had so many second chances in this game, second chance points. Yeah, God, probably because they out-rebounded them 32-15. That's probably why it felt like that. Yeah, Notre Dame tried to slow it down, and it kept them in the game for a while, but eventually North Carolina just pulled away. It was too much talent.
You mentioned Bryce Johnson and Marcus Page. They're doing a fantastic job. You can barely name more than one player on each team to really, you know, because Buddy Hield, you mentioned he has a great supporting cast. But with North Carolina, you had those other names that pop up who've led the team other than that one player. You know, it seems like Hild's carried Oklahoma each and every game they've played in. He's been the guy. Going into the Final Four, do you think that'll change? Do you think we'll see someone from maybe Villanova have a guy who's kind of a dark horse who don't really think about maybe step up because they're trying to take away from their star player? Or do you think we'll end up having the kind of the same story we've had so far in the tournament with the main guy on the team?
Yeah, it's possible. I think North Carolina's a deeper team, so North Carolina has more guys that can beat you, honestly. So I could see that. But Oklahoma's deep, pretty deep, too. I think they're the two deepest teams. So I could see somebody from one of those two teams, you know, stepping up. Anybody. And these four teams, they got multiple good players, you know. Any one of these four teams can have somebody that, you know, has kind of been under the radar, have a big game. So, yeah, that usually happens in these Final Four games. That's a good point.
And we'll see, you know, actually both of these games, Clay, that we have here in the Final Four, all two of these matchups here, they're also repeats for matchups we've had earlier on in the season. Do you think maybe having that will be an advantage going into the Final Four of these two teams, seeing this team before, knowing what they like to do, obviously having tape on this team from the regular season, do you think they'll be able to get enough from that, or do you think these teams have maybe changed a little in the tournament that will kind of mix it up in the matchup this weekend?
That's a good point, that especially that Nova-Oklahoma game. That was such a long time ago. You know, I don't think that'll have as much. Syracuse and North Carolina are obviously very familiar with each other, both being in the ACC and playing each other, you know, every year. So, that'll definitely have an advantage. It'd be like in college football if, you know, Alabama and LSU were in the playoffs, you know, playing each other. So, yeah, there's definitely going to be an advantage there, for both teams. So it could kind of wash out. I don't think the Villanova-Oklahoma, I don't think that'll be much of a factor. If they played each other so early in the year, you know, non-conference. I think it was actually in a tournament. I might be wrong about that. I don't think it'll matter as much in that particular game, but it'll definitely be a factor in the Syracuse-North Carolina game, I think.
We mentioned earlier on in the show that they had announced this year's college basketball men's All-American squad. Unanimous votes were Buddy Hield and Valentine from Michigan State. Also on that first team All-American, you have Bryce Johnson, of course, from North Carolina, we just mentioned. He's going to be in the Final Four. He's on there. You have Malcolm Brogdon of Virginia, the guy who just was shown the door, and he's out for the season. Of course, Virginia being knocked out by Cuse. And you also have Tyler Ulis, one of the best point guards in the nation for Kentucky. He's on that first team as well. And to give you a rundown of who else we have in the All-American squad on the second team, you have 7-footer Jacob Patel from Utah, the big guy, of course, that a lot of people think he's going to go early in the draft this year, so keep eye on him. You also have freshman, of course, Ben Simmons. Guy's going to be one of the first two, three picks in the league. He's on the second team. His team didn't really get a chance to showcase any of their talent in the postseason, didn't have that great of a regular season, declined their invitation for the NIT, so he didn't really get to see any more from him than what you saw in the regular season. Of course, Kansas big man Perry Ellis, and Providence junior Chris Dunn is going to be a big name in the draft to look for this year as well. Iowa State senior Jorge Nyang also on that second team. On the third squad, Grayson Allen from Duke, Yogi Ferrell from Indiana, Jared Uloff from Iowa, Kay Fuller of Oakland, kind of a weird name and a weird team there thrown in there, and also Jamal Murray from Kentucky as well. That's your three teams this year's All-American squad. Pretty impressive. Some of the teams, some of the names we're not really too surprised that are on there. Nevertheless, it's cool to see this, some of this talent, like I mentioned, getting ready to be one and done, two and done, and heading to the NBA draft this summer.
It is disappointing how LSU finished, obviously. I mean, we've talked about that, but that, it's still, I wish they would have accepted an NIT bid. You know, they could have made an NIT run, but I guess they were so disappointed in the regular season they didn't even want to play the NIT.
Clay, if you're a NBA GM and you're going from when Ben Simmons was a senior in high school, he makes his decision to go to LSU, and this is before he plays any games in college. And your mindset is, you know, all the hype is this guy's going to be the next, you know, they use LeBron James, the next big name, big superstar athlete that's going to be in college basketball for 1 year and also jump to the NBA, sign a huge shoe deal with Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, one of those footwear organizations, come into the league and get paid mass money and lead a team right away. Does your mindset change after seeing him play and seeing his team really be a disappointment throughout the year this year?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't think he's a shoe-in for the number one overall pick. Still probably will be, just because there's so much potential there, and he's still so young. But, yeah, it's definitely going to put some doubt in some GM's mind, no doubt about it.
Do you think like a guy like Brandon Ingram, who, of course, got a chance to showcase his talents in the postseason and carried his team to the Sweet 16, do you think a guy like him will be able to, big name they're throwing out there, all these GMs and all these guys throwing out there, as this guy was really impressive. He showcased his talent not only in the regular season but also in the postseason. That could be a guy that dethrones Ben Simmons as a number one overall pick.
I don't know. Buddy Hield, maybe, but he's kind of an older guy. You know, he's kind of doubtful that he'll get taken number one overall just because he's older. But, yeah, Brandon Ingram, you know, 6'9", guard. Yeah, got a lot of talent, too. Obviously played under Mike Krzyzewski this year. So he's going to be a little bit more mature, probably, than Ben Simmons. A little bit further along in his game, probably, right now than Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons probably has a little bit better potential. It'll be interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if Brandon Ingram, I mean, they're both big, 6'9", guys who can handle the ball, you know. So they're both really similar players. That is an interesting comparison.
I'm actually really excited about this year's NBA draft than I have been in the last couple of years. I don't know if it's just because I got the chance to watch more college hoops this year and get to know some of these players a little bit better than I have in the recent years or what, but it's not really a huge draft by any means. You talk to any of these draft experts and they're saying, you know, of course, you go back to a few drafts ago, you had, you know, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, you had all those names. This year, of course, you have Ben Simmons, but he was really the only name that was thrown out there preseason. Then all these guys showcase what they can do, opened up a lot of eyes and ears in the NBA front offices. So now I'm really excited to see what happens this June. We want to go ahead and make our picks, Clay, for the Final Four and who we see in Houston this weekend getting the big win and heading to the national championship. So the first game I want to look at, Clay, is going to be Villanova taking on Oklahoma.
It's tough. You know, I like Villanova, obviously. I'm a Jay Wright fan. But I think Oklahoma's just got more NBA talent. I really do. I like the way this team's playing. They're hot. They're shooting hot from outside. Villanova, I think they need to try and make it a low-scoring game like they did against Kansas. Can they do it, you know, two games in a row? Yeah, I guess another Big 12 team. That's going to be the ultimate question. I think it's a lower-scoring game than what Oklahoma's used to playing. But I think it'll be 75-70 somewhere, final score, somewhere in that neighborhood. Oklahoma coming out on top, I think.
I'm going to stay there with you and pick Oklahoma. It's going to be a tighter game than we've seen Oklahoma play the last couple of matchups, especially against Oregon the other day in the Elite Eight. I do like Villanova's defense. I love Jay Wright, just like you. I think it will be tighter. It will be more defensive game. A little low scoring. I do think it'll be still getting the 60s, obviously. Maybe you see a team getting the 70s. I think Oklahoma's going to get it done probably about 72-64, something like that. And the big matchup, of course, in the ACC, Syracuse, and the only 10 seed to ever reach the Final Four. Can they keep it going? Can they knock off the only one seed remaining, North Carolina?
I'm going to say no, but I think it'll be a good game. I think Syracuse will stay in it. I think it'll be a 40-minute game. I really do. But I think North Carolina will pull away in the last few minutes. Just too much offense, too many weapons. I think Syracuse is going to try and make it another ugly defensive game like we just talked about. But I think North Carolina's just got too much talent, too many scores. I think it'll be 72-65, somewhere like that, North Carolina pulling away.
Syracuse, Nobody wanted you in the tournament. Nobody liked you at the 10 seed. That was giving you a gift there. Then you showed everybody wrong. You beat Gonzaga. You knock off some more teams. You find your way. You knock off Villanova somehow, and then you get to the Final Four to rematch with North Carolina Tar Heels. But I see it ending right here this Saturday in Houston. Give me the Tar Heels. I'm going to take 10+.
You calling for the blowout?
It may not be a blowout per se. It's going to be a really tough game, I think, in the first half. But then down the stretch, it's just there's too much Bryce
similar
Johnson,
to
too much Marcus
game.
Page.
You think it'll be similar to the North Carolina-Notre Dame game?
You look at some of the numbers from that game, Clay, from Notre Dame and North Carolina. The starting five all got in double digits for North Carolina. Bryce Johnson led the way with 25, but you had Marcus Page with 13. Berry had 11. Jad Johnson had 11 as well. And the Meeks finished up with 10, and they shot really good as well. Every player just about besides Page shot 50% or over. I see that carrying over into this matchup this weekend. I can see getting into the national championship game. I feel more confident about this pick than I do Oklahoma and Nova, of course. But if these picks are right, which, you know, we did pretty great on our brackets. if these picks are right, it'd be one heck of a matchup to have Buddy Hield in Oklahoma and Bryce Johnson of North Carolina facing off for the national championship.
I agree. It would be.
So, Clay, we are getting closer this Sunday, and Monday for a lot of teams is opening day for the Major League Baseball League.
Oh, it is. Phew, wow. Caught up on it.
Of course, some teams have had better luck than others so far when it comes to staying healthy through spring training. The L.A. Dodgers are going to be in world of a hurt as their season gets started this weekend. They've had injury after injury after injury, and it's looking like even more could happen before we get to this weekend. You know, Mattingly's gone. A lot of pieces. Zach Greinke's gone from this team, so they're missing a lot of pieces than what they had last season going into the playoffs. It's going to be a rough start for the Dodgers, just to name one team out there that's going to have a rough start of it. But, Clay, we're going to see the MLB finally get it going here this Sunday, as the first game we're going to have is going to be Sunday, April 3rd at 1 o'clock. The Cardinals will be taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates, followed by the Cubs going to the Angels, and then probably one of the best matchups of the day is the Blue Jays and the Rays. And then, to top it all off, Clay, the last game of the first day of the regular season, you have the World Series rematch.
Wow.
The New York Mets taking on the Kansas City Royals. Breakers that came up upon us today is that pitcher Matt Harvey of the New York Mets, he had asked for a medical leave earlier on in the week, did not feel well, and it came out that today that he had a blood clot in his bladder. He has passed that. And he is good to go. They gave him the heads up, and he is ready to start opening day for the New York Mets. And, Clay, you may ask, why is that a huge deal? Why is that a breaking news story? Well, if you go back to the last couple of seasons, he's the only pitcher, Clay, that is 8-0, perfect record, in April, the opening month of the regular season.
It helps to get off to a hot start, for sure. And that's crazy that he's perfect.
Will it be able to carry on? You got to think it's going to be a tough matchup as they rematch with the team they lost to in the World Series. It's going to be a heck of a night.
Is it just a one-game series, or is it a regular three games?
I think it actually carries on to a three-game series.
Okay. I know before they've done like these little one-game, you know, for the first game of the year, just play one game instead of doing a series. I didn't know if that's how it was going
to
be.
Yeah, I believe we got a three-game series here. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think, to kind of get back to where we ended the season last year. With these two teams, you have three of these four games that I mentioned on ESPN networks to get you ready for the Major League Baseball season. Then on Monday, most of the other teams get underway. You have the Houston Astros taking on the Yankees on ESPN, followed by the Giants and Brewers, Minnesota Twins, the Orioles, Mariners taking on the Rangers, Red Sox, and Indians. And then the one of the lopsided matchups of the first weekend of the regular season, Clay, you have the Washington Nationals taking on the Atlanta Braves.
Only you're going to do that.
Probably going to be a quick series, and it probably will be a sweep.
Over under 60 wins for the Braves this year.
I'm going to say over. 60's pretty low.
That's pretty low.
But I don't, you know what, it may be 61. It won't be that many over 60, I'll tell you that. It's going to be a rough year for the Braves. We may do a fun segment in the next coming weeks of the show about the Braves and who they have on their roster. Who are these guys? Are they regular players, or are they just normal dudes that you wouldn't even know if they were Brave players or not? So we may do that later on. You also have Phillies and the Reds. Dodgers, like I mentioned, they're going to have a rough start here. They actually open up with a pretty decent matchup with the San Diego Padres, a matchup that I'm looking forward to. We mentioned that's happening on opening day, Sunday, followed by the next day, The Blue Jays will take on the Rays, Rockies, and look out, Clay, for the Arizona Diamondbacks. They signed Zach Greinke. They have some other free agents out there. They're going to be a team to watch for this year. The Cubs will take on the Angels, and the White Sox will take on the Athletics. That's the first 2 days of opening day, and major and baseball is officially here this weekend.
People are fired up, that's for sure. And we should probably clear the air. We're Braves fans. So
yeah, we're not really trashing the Braves. We are, really, but it's okay because we're fans of that team.
Right, so that's okay.
You can say bad things about the teams you love.
Exactly.
So, Clay, with that, let's go ahead and let's make our picks. If you got it ready, we'll go ahead and make our picks for each division in Major League Baseball and who we see winning that division at the end of the year.
Okay.
I want to go ahead and start in the National League and the division we're talking about right now with the Braves.
Yeah.
In the NL East, who do you see coming out of that and having the best record and winning that division this year?
Well, I think it's definitely a two-team race between the Mets and the Nationals. Washington, obviously, New York, obviously, surprised a lot of people, pretty much everybody, about making it to the World Series. I'm going to go with the Mets again. I think it'll be wire-to-wire all year. But I think the Mets will, I like that staff. I think the pitch staff will be the difference. I think they'll pull away and win the East.
I like the Mets too. You know, there's a lot of reasons to like the Nationals. Of course, Bryce Harper feels like he's taken over Major League Baseball in the offseason. That's all people can talk about, getting ready for the regular season. So we'll see. I'm sure he's going to have a breakout year like he has already in his outstanding career. When it comes to pieces, you mentioned just having all these other pieces that the Mets have, pitching and then having hitting as well. I like them to get – it's going to be close. It's going to be a two-team race like you mentioned, but I like the Mets to have the best record in the NL East. How about the NL Central?
Well, obviously the Cubs had another great year last year. But don't overlook the Pirates and the Cardinals. I think this is definitely a three-team race. The Brewers and the Reds, you know, they're a little bit behind. They're kind of like Atlanta. They're in rebuilding modes. Yeah, I think it'll be a three-team race between the Cubs, the Pirates, and the Cardinals. You obviously got to like Andrew McCutchen for Pittsburgh. You know, he's put the franchise on his back these last few years and has brought them from a they were so bad for so many years. You know, it was after really their last good year was that when the Braves beat them in the playoffs back in the early 90s. And since that game, they hadn't been in the playoffs for 15 years or more. But these last couple of years, you know, with Andrew McCutchen leading the way, Pittsburgh is really taking off. I think it's going to be between Chicago and Pittsburgh. Right now, I'm going to go with Pittsburgh. I don't know if Chicago, they kind of surprised people last year. You know, they're going to have to prove to people that they can sustain it for more than 1 year. So I think it's going to be Pittsburgh, just ahead of Chicago and just ahead of St. Louis. I think all three teams could be separated by, you know, 5 or 6 games. I think it's going to be really close.
I'm glad you highlighted St. Louis because a lot of people going into this year had kind of forgotten about this team because all the noise around Chicago with the Cubs last season and also the rise of the Pirates in the last couple of years. Obviously, you forget what St. Louis has done. However, this has been one of the most consistent teams in Major League Baseball over the last 5 to 10 years. And I've heard a little bit about this Cardinals team this past week, and I like them. I actually think they're going to give the Cubs a harder test than the Pirates will for that divisional win. But I like the Cubs to get it done and then maybe have the Cardinals second and then the Pirates third.
I agree. I think it's going to be maybe the tightest race in all of baseball, those three teams, I think.
I think you're right. There's that one, and there's one AL league that's going to be super tight that I'll get to here in just a few minutes. But to round out the National League, Clay, how about we go to the West? And you have the Diamondbacks, the Rockies, Dodgers, the Padres, and the Giants. Who do you think is going to be able to stay on top of that division?
You know, I like how Arizona was that drinky. Also, you know, the Dodgers, you know, they've been kind of up and down, but they obviously have a lot of talent. San Francisco, you know, they were back. They were back last year. Oh, man, that's a tough division to pick. Right now, I'm going to go with the Dodgers.
Really? With all the health problems and injuries we've had in the preseason and spring training, think they're going to be able to overcome that and get it done?
They had health injuries, you know, last year and year before last. I mean, it's a long season, and they eventually pulled it out. You know, remember that was it Puig's first year? I remember how bad, how disappointing, how bad they were. And then by the time the season ended, they had won the division. So, yeah, I like the Dodgers. But San Francisco and Arizona, it'll be another tight division. It'll be, I can see those three teams being separated by only three or four games.
I love the Dodgers. I love Clayton Kershaw. We've seen a lot from Yasiel Puig in the last three seasons. Or this will be his third season. But you mentioned Zach Greinke in Arizona. That's a team to watch out for. A lot of people have forgotten about them over the last couple of years. I feel like the Giants are more stable and the more ready because most of these guys on this team has been there. Brandon Belt, and you got Hunter Pence. All these players, Lincecum, they've all been there. They've all know what it takes to – yeah, the baseball season, the regular season, it's a long season. There's 162 regular season games, and then you have the playoffs. If I have a team like this, and we mentioned the Cardinals just a minute ago, to sustain that ability of succession to not only win games in the regular season but carry that over into the postseason is very impressive. And I feel like this is a Giants team that that knows how to do that. They've been there. They've done that. So I'm picking them to win that division and head to probably a very successful postseason series, maybe run to another World Series.
That's a good, that's a safe pick. I don't blame you for it. I'm just kind of in a gambling mood, I guess.
One of those guys living on the edge.
Oh yeah, for the Dodgers.
I want to go ahead. I want to jump down to the bottom of the American League, Clay, and go to the AL West. Who do you see coming out of this division and having maybe? Posing a strong danger to their playoff hunt.
I think it's going to be the two Texas teams at the top. You know, Houston, what a surprise they've been. You know, second most home runs in baseball with some young players, Carlos Correa, George Springer, some of those guys. You know, they're only going to be another year older. So I'm gonna go with Houston. I think they're a good young team. They hit a lot of home runs. I think Texas will be right on their heels, but I like Houston just a little bit more. I like that young talent.
Robinson Cano for the Seattle Mariners the other day hit three home runs in one game. Now it was spring training. I get that. However, if this is what we can expect to see from him in the regular season, expect a monster year from Robinson Cano. Who knows why in the world he picked Seattle to go to as a free agent? Nobody knows. But he will put on a show for that Mariners team, and they may be able to carry them. I'm not saying they're going to win the division. I'm not as risky, and I'm not a gambler like you are. If I were, I would probably pick them just because of Robinson Cano. But I'm going to be more sensible here, and I'm going to go it's going to be tough. It's going to be, you know, we mentioned the Houston Astros were a surprise they are. Just a few seasons ago, they were the worst team in baseball. Nobody knew who any of their players were.
Right.
And then they made a strong push last year. And now they're one of the favorites to make a push to the World Series this year. I like them to edge out the Oakland A's for that divisional win. I love the Athletics. I still what they're able to do. They, you know, they have incredible management down there, or actually over there in the West. Wow. And it's really cool to see Houston Astros and the Oakland A's be this good and have, you know, a huge competition for winning their division.
Playing a little Moneyball.
Little Moneyball. I mean, ever since that movie came out, they've been on a roll.
Yeah, they have.
And then we'll go over to the Central of the American League, and you have the White Sox, the Indians, the Tigers, Kansas City, the World Series champs, and the Minnesota Twins. Who do you like?
Well, I'm going to be conservative on this. I'm going to take the World Series chance. I'm going to go with Kansas City. I just like where this team is built, put together. I think they'll win this division by, you know, seven or eight games, honestly. Detroit's pretty good. They've been, you know, Detroit's been around for a while. Minnesota's getting better. Cleveland and Chicago are both, you know, 500-type teams, I think. I think Detroit will give them a little run for their money. I think Minnesota will have a winning record, but at the end of the day, I think Kansas City is just a little bit better than both of them, and they'll pull away.
I like it. I mean, how can you go wrong picking the World Series champs? And it's really impressive what they've been able to do in such a short period of time. The Royals put this roster together, and I like them. I like the Detroit Tigers as well, one of the best put-together organizations also in Major League Baseball. It's going to be a tough stretch. I just like Kansas City to get it done. Maybe even, like you mentioned, 7 or 8 games. I like them, but I like the Tigers as well. And look out for the Minnesota Twins. They're going to have a good year this year. They have a few young prospects. They're going to win more games than people think they are.
I agree.
And finally, I think the toughest division in Major League Baseball, Clay, is the AL East. You have the Baltimore Orioles, the Boston Red Sox, the New York Yankees, Tampa Bay Rays, and Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah. All four of them have won a division in the last 4 years.
Exactly.
That's tough. It's the toughest one to pick, in all honesty. But, you know, the team I really like, and I've liked them for a while, is the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, they play in that stadium. They hit a whole lot of home runs. You know, they got Jose Bautista and those guys. They're the team that I really like. I used to like Tampa Bay a lot. I still do, but I don't feel like they're quite as consistent as they've been in the past. You know, Buck Showalter, Baltimore Orioles coach, you know, he was on Seinfeld there for a while. I got to pull for him, but at the end of the day, I think Toronto's the most sounded team in this division. I think the Yankees will finish a close second, but I'm going to go with Toronto.
You mentioned the Orioles and Buck Showalter. But they did a good job keeping some of their best players in-house. You know, Brandon Weeters, he was on his way out. They signed him back. They also signed Chris Davis. They didn't think that deal was going to get done. It finally did. That was their big home run hitter and at first base. So they signed him back. They have pretty much the same core about ready to go. I like them. However, Mookie Betts and the Boston Red Sox, they also went out and got David Price, who was on that Blue Jay
team. We mentioned Boston.
Exactly. He was on that Blue Jay team that made that strong push for the World Series last year. Now, he's a Boston Red Sox starter for opening day this year. They announced that today. He'll be the starter.
Yeah.
So I like Boston as well. Always like Boston. New York Yankees, they're going to have a good year too. Tampa Bay is going to finish last in this division. Give me the Blue Jays. I like Tulowitzki and Jose Bautista and what they've been able to do, just putting all these pieces together at the trade deadline last year and also in free agency. And actually stockpiling some of their draft picks and making good picks when it comes to pitchers. They've done an outstanding job in the last 2 or 3 years really building this roster.
Good point.
So those are our picks to win their divisions in the MLB. Opening day is Sunday, April the 3rd, and also on April the 4th is when most of the other teams will get underway, and we'll probably be recapping some of those games Tuesday on next week's Sports Report. Now, Clay, some more breaking news that happened earlier on in the week. We finally have a home for one quarterback that was looking for one, and that is Robert Griffin III signing a 2-year deal worth $15 million with the Cleveland Browns.
Well, I think the reason why he signed it, obviously, this was Cleveland's pitch. They said, listen, RG3, we're an NFL team. This is not a lie. We're not a very good NFL team. You probably can't name 10 players on our roster, but we're an NFL organization, and if you want to come compete for a quarterback job, you know, here's an offer. So I think that's why I took it, because it was an offer to start for an NFL team. Because honestly, Cleveland doesn't have much to offer other than that. But what does RG3 have to offer? So I think it's a pretty good deal. It's just a 2-year deal. The money's a little high in my opinion but if he is your starting quarterback, paying out $7.5 million a year is not terrible. I still wouldn't be surprised if they drafted a quarterback though. But this team has a lot of holes. They might, you know, they have so many holes that they might trade back. Stockpile the draft picks and maybe draft a quarterback next year, because it is a weak quarterback class. I don't know. Do you like it? Do you forward or against it?
Well, it all comes down to Hugh Jackson. Robert Griffin III has a great relationship with Hugh Jackson. The thing highly of Robert Griffin, Hugh Jackson does, and that coaching staff they put together. So that's really what it came down to. Another team that was close to signing him was the Denver Broncos. And the difference really was Hugh Jackson and having that relationship. The unknown of Denver and probably, you know, going out of getting Mark Sanchez, a guy who you can compete against. And obviously I think we'll see Denver make a pick in the draft for a quarterback. But I don't think Cleveland's done either. They have the second pick in the draft this year. A lot of people is expecting them to pick Jared Goff out of California. I think they should go the other way and pick the Wentz at quarterback. That's probably the safer and the right choice to make. But who do? And I'm not a NFL GM. I just I play one on Madden and I do a great job.
But, my question is, who is RG3 going to throw it to?
Nobody.
Right.
They released Dwayne Bowe, who you forgot is even on that team.
Yeah.
This offseason. They lost Alex Mack, of course, their Pro Bowl center. He's now the Atlanta Falcon center this year. So a lot of questions. They lost so many pieces in free agency this year. The good players that they actually had on that team are no longer there. Robert Griffin III is now the face, of course, of the Cleveland Browns. Now that Manziel is gone, and some of their defensive players that they had last year, they're gone as well. So it's going to be it's not going to be a great year for Cleveland. I'm not going to get your hopes up and saying that RG3 is going to save your year. But it all came down to Hugh Jackson. It's not a huge gamble for the Browns because it's 2 years, it's $15 million, and most of that's not, I won't say most, but the end of that is towards incentives and Pro Bowls and playoffs and everything that you don't think he'll be able to reach. So it's probably not all guaranteed money anyway.
So you think it's a pretty safe deal for the Browns?
I think it's safe. However, I still think this opens the door for them to go out and get a quarterback in the draft. Maybe they won't do it with the first pick. They may fill another need, you know? Who knows?
Right.
They may end up trading back a little bit and getting two picks in the first 15 or whatever. Who knows what they'll do there? But I think they do need to make a pick at quarterback to be safe, because they've had how many? 1,000 quarterbacks since 1999? They need a guy who they can develop. And I think Hugh Jackson is just that, a quarterback developer. And that'll be the right thing to do if you're Cleveland.
Cleveland does have a couple good young players that I like. They got Cameron Irvin on their offensive line. Barkevious Mingo. He's been a little bit disappointing, in my opinion. Would you agree, Mingo?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a high draft pick that they – it kind of feels like a waste almost at this point.
And he's been in the league. Yeah, I guess he has been in the league, though. He's already been in the league 4 years. I think he's only – I guess that's right, 2011. Yeah, man. He's a little older than I thought he was. Yeah, he has been a disappointment. They got a few good young players, but they haven't – no receivers – they got Joe Hayden. They got it's secondary. Justin Gilbert, a pretty good young corner. So they got some pretty good young DBs. They obviously lost their best offensive lineman in Alex Mack, but I think the offensive line can be serviceable. They got a couple good running backs, Isaiah Crowell, Duke Johnson. So they're set at running back. I don't recognize really any of these names at tight end. E.J. Gibbs, I think he played at Iowa State. Yeah, he was a decent tight end, but he's still a young guy. None of these receivers, I don't recognize any. The only receiver that name I recognize on the roster is Terrell Pryor, and he played quarterback at Iowa State. So that tells you something about their skill positions. They're lacking a lot in the skill positions. So I think they might have to trade back.
So what you're telling me is we could probably end up seeing this Cleveland Browns team in the same situation next year when the draft comes around. They could still be probably in the same 2-3 range, maybe the number one overall pick. Who knows?
Yeah, it's very possible.
And, Clay, one more thing I want to get to today. I want to go back to the NBA just a little bit here and talk about a team that is on fire at the right time, and that is the Oklahoma City Thunder. In their last 8 games, they were 8-0, and they have not scored less than 111 points.
Wow.
Last night against the Toronto Raptors, you would agree, is one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, right?
Oh, no doubt about it.
Last night against that Raptors team, Oklahoma City won by 119, 119-100, and Russell Westbrook had his 16th triple-double of the season. That is too shy of the NBA record for the most triple-doubles in a regular season, behind Magic Johnson, who had 18.
Right.
Last night, Westbrook had, he had 26 points, he had 11 rebounds, and 12 assists. And so this brought up a lot of questions. Him getting 16 triple-doubles this year brought up a lot of questions about what it would look like if this was the old NBA and the pace of the game was a little bit slower, and he was still his athlete that he really is. He's one of the most explosive ones in the league now. Could you imagine him back in the 60s?
Wow.
It's really impressive. Tom Hapestro, ESPN guy, one of my favorite ESPN people and NBA people to really listen to, and he has really good inputs on teams and players. He put this together here, and this is showing the comparison of what it will look like per 100 possessions right now in the NBA. Okay, so Oscar Robinson in 1961 and 62, Clay, he averaged 26 points. Actually, if you round up, 27 points, 11 rebounds, and 10 assists, right?
Right.
Russell Westbrook this year, per 100 possessions, 34 points, 11 rebounds, and 15 assists.
Not just because there wasn't a shot clock back in the day and they could have the teams could hold it, didn't have to get shot off as quick, so they had fewer possessions back in the day.
Right, right. But you got to think, you compare these two.
He'd be averaging 30 for that. He'd be one of the all-time greats.
Exactly, because you look at, everyone sees Oscar Robinson as, you know, Mr. Triple-Double, the guy who pretty much averaged one his whole career.
Great player.
And now you have Russell Westbrook, who's putting on a monster effort this season. Had his 16th of the year. Do you guys think he's going to come close to getting that 18 and tying the record with Magic Johnson? He's had seven this month, which is ties another record set by Michael Jordan. And it's really the most impressive thing about this, Clay, is that Russell Westbrook, when he has that triple-double, Oklahoma City Thunder are 16-0.
Well, I remember last year, you know, when Durant was hurt, you know, he was just on a tear, you know, and I wondered if he could keep it up, you know, with Durant being back. But obviously, I think it's even more impressive that Durant's back, that he's still putting up these type of numbers.
What's crazy to think about is you look at all his triple-doubles. Not all of these are him scoring over 30, scoring over 25. He's had games where he barely got over double digits. However, kicking in 13, 14 assists, grabbing 12, 13 rebounds, and still giving that effort, you know, driving to the lane, getting easy layups, or, you know, creating a fast break or something like that, doing what he naturally does, that is what the Oklahoma City Thunder are looking for. And it's really impressive what Billy Donovan, the first-year coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder, what they're doing with Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant when they're staggering their minutes, not really playing them together, and then sitting them both on the bench. You have to keep one of them out there. That's the way that they're looking at this, is they want to keep one of those players out on the floor at all times. Yes, they'll play together, but we don't want them both on the bench at the same time. That's where they've had their worst basketball of the season. Naturally, you would think that with, you know, possibly two of the top five players in the league.
No doubt. And I know you talked about, you know, the possibility. I think it's a super slim possibility that Durant would leave to go to Golden State. You think, does it help him playing with Westbrook? I mean, do you think he likes playing with Westbrook? Or do you think that, you know,
I think
you got two guys that are so good. Do they, you know, does one of them want to be the man, or they both don't mind sharing the spotlight? I guess that's what I'm trying
to say. Well, I'm glad you asked that, because I got to listen to a really interesting podcast with Adrian Wojnarowski from Yahoo Sports today. He actually interviewed Billy Donovan.
Yeah.
And he kind of brought that same question up about, you know, do we see any kind of attitude between these two players? And Billy Donovan said that Russell Westbrook told him that they're brothers. And Kevin Durant, to me, is a rare breed in the NBA. Yeah, he's got superstar talent. He has amazing God-gift abilities to go out there and be this, you know, beast that he is. Tall, has, you know, lanky arms. It's a hard guy to defend. But he also is one of the nicest guys in the NBA that has great head on his shoulders. He knows his family has been to the bottom, and now they're all the way here to the top. Of course, he's led them. He's got them here. He's experienced his mom having pretty much go through poverty and work two or three jobs to put him in school. So he knows what the bad stuff looks like, and he's seen all that. Now he's carrying that over and making the right choices for himself and his family in the NBA in this magnificent career that he has. And it's not going to be easy for him to leave Oklahoma City. He's been asked every single night when he goes on the road if he want to play for this team, that team, all that. It's going to take a lot to pull him away from Oklahoma City Thunder, because he has a brotherhood with Serge Ibaka, with Russell Westbrook. You know, the community, they're really tight with this community. Of course, you know, BIS being one of the new home.
Yeah.
They were in Seattle when he was drafted, and then they came to Oklahoma City, and they established that community and that love for the game of basketball. This is, and we've seen them when they make their amazing runs into the postseason, being one of the best fan bases in the NBA when it comes to being there for their team and supporting them and knowing basketball. You know, there's one thing to have fans who just show up for games, but there's another one to actually be into the game and know what's going on. And that's what this Oklahoma City community does for the Thunder. So I don't think that there's an attitude with them. I think they both generally just want to have – they put the team above themselves. That's why you see Russell Westbrook not scoring 40 points like he probably could have, but scoring 11 and then getting 14 assists.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that's been better this year, you could say, with Billy Donovan is spacing and ball movement. That's one thing they focused on. It seemed like they had a lot of isolation in prior years with Scottie Brooks. But one thing they wanted to do this year was put more space between players and create more passing lanes. And they've done that this year. That's really impressive what they've been able to do. Yeah, they had a bad stretch there coming after the All-Star break, but they're hitting it in full stride right now, flying into the playoffs. Clay, but I think what we'll see happen this year in the summer in free agency, everyone's asking where Kevin Durant's going to go. It's going to be a letdown, but I'll tell you what's probably going to happen.
What's that?
We're going to see Kevin Durant sign a one-year deal with Oklahoma City Thunder to come back and then next year be in the same situation.
Ooh, kind of like a LeBron.
Just like LeBron. You know, a lot of people ask, why would he want to do that? Well, if you come back one year and you pick up that option, you come back the next year and play them for one more year, next summer, Russell Westbrook's contract is up as well. So Kevin Durant's contract will be up if he picks up his option and plays this year. Next season, his one-year deal will be done. Russell Westbrook's deal he signed a few years ago, that'll be done. And the salary jumps up another $20 million. So you get paid more money. So you would lose probably $20, $30 million if you sign a max deal with another team this year. Remember, if he signs another deal, a max deal with Oklahoma City, He gets an extra 5 year. He gets that 1 year worth, you know, another max contract. Yeah. He gets 4 year anywhere else he goes.
Right.
So if he does that, if he goes anywhere else and he signs this year with someone else, he'll probably be missing out on $40 million. Not that he needs it, but it couldn't hurt.
I just hear your boy, Chris, I think it's Chris Broussard. He's talking about what a crazy summer it's going to be. So many max contracts are going to be passed out. There's going to be more so many max contracts and so many players that are not worth nowhere near max money. And he says it's going to be insane this summer.
It will. It's going to be – I mean, everyone's going to get paid. Every team theoretically has cap space. Anyone can go out and sign a max contract player.
Wow.
Or two.
Wow.
But even next year, it jumps up even more.
And he actually did mention Dwight Howard to Atlanta, but I don't think it happens still.
I'm telling you, if you're Atlanta, you want to stay away. I know the new GMs want to make a splash.
And rest out Horford just bolts and, you know, go somewhere else, then maybe Howard can be a big player.
We'll see Atlanta make a draft pick for a center this draft season anyway. Don't forget they have Tavares in the D-League who's tearing it up. He's 7'3". Why he's not up on the roster right now, I don't know. He should be.
I agree, especially with Tiago Splitter being out.
Yep, I don't get that at all. However,
Humphries is playing pretty well.
I know. How about Humphries? Kind of saving. Ever since he's been on the team, they've won every game but two, I think.
He's got a pretty good little mid-range jumper.
Yeah, he's like Zaza, but better.
Yeah, not as big.
But, it's going to be an interesting summer this year. Kevin Durant's going to be a free agent, but I do think we'll see that he'll pick up that option. He'll come back for one more year, and then that way everything will be lined up next year. Russell Westbrook's deal will be done. They could potentially go somewhere else together if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Or he can sign a four-year deal with the Warriors. If he's gonna leave, it makes sense to go ahead and do it this year. However, you would lose more money. But if you're going to maybe think about jumping ship and going to Golden State, if you don't do it this year, you're pretty much just wasting a year you could have potentially getting a championship.
True. I just can't see Kevin Durant another uniform. I could see Westbrook in another uniform now. I don't know why I feel that way, but I just can't see Durant. I just can't see him leaving.
He kind of represents Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
He really does.
Yeah.
He's my favorite player in the league. And I want him to win a championship. Whatever best position puts him to do that, that's what I want. I saw Allen Iverson go his whole career without winning a championship.
Yeah.
And that's really the story of my favorite athletes. They never win championships unless they're in Alabama.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be an interesting summer for sure. I love what the Thunder are doing right now. Now, my next question, Clay, do you think they'll be able to ride this momentum into a deep playoff push, and could they dethrone one of the top two teams in the league, San Antonio or Golden State?
Well, they'll get their shot at probably San Antonio, you know, first in that potential second round matchup, the way things are looking. I like their chances against San Antonio better than I like their chances against Golden State. I don't know. I think San Antonio and Golden State, man, they're both playing really great basketball, but Oklahoma City is too, obviously. That's going to be tough. It'll be a six or seven game series, especially with San Antonio. I can see that being a six or seven game series. Oklahoma and Golden State, maybe a five or six, probably another at least six game series. I don't think Golden State's just going to run through the playoffs like they've been running through the regular season. I think they're going to get some stiff challenges in the playoffs.
67-6, Golden State. Do they get to 73 wins? Or do they lose the record? Somehow lose three games and lose the record.
This whole time, I feel like they're going to lose the record, but I don't know. They got to play San Antonio again
twice, and the Thunder once.
Just look at there. Well, my internet's down. Right on cue. they play Oklahoma City, San Antonio twice.
They play the San Antonio twice. They play Oklahoma City once.
Uh huh.
I think they have to play Boston. That's another team you have to look out for. Yeah, they have the Wizards tonight, actually on TNT. Going to watch that game on replay because it's going to be too late for this old man to stay up and watch it. Golden State, they take a Utah team, Clay. They play them, who's actually, that's a second night of a back-to-back. Who knows what could happen there? The Jazz just beat the Lakers by 48, the worst loss in the Laker franchise history yesterday.
Yeah, I watched those back-to-backs.
So, second game off of back-to-back, they have Utah. Then they they have a tough schedule coming up. They play Wizards tonight, Utah Jazz tomorrow. Then on Friday, they play the Boston Celtics. Then they play the Portland Trail Blazers, who beat them earlier on in the year. They play the Minnesota Timberwolves, the San Antonio Spurs, the Memphis Grizzlies, Spurs, and the Grizzlies again. So they don't play the Thunder, but they play the Grizzlies twice, Spurs twice, Timberwolves, Blazers, Celtics, Jazz, and Wizards.
Honestly, I think they'll only lose two more games. I think they'll get the record with that schedule.
I think they will, too.
I'm changing my tune now that just come down to it.
Yep, I think so, too. I think Golden State's going to get done. I hope they'll be able to maintain this, and hope it's not. Because in history, I mean, you want to look back, Clay, 30 years down the road, you want to look back and say this team broke the NBA record and won the NBA championship. So if they don't do that, say San Antonio wins, I mean, that could be one of the biggest disappointments.
But hey, San Antonio's right on their heels. They're having a great year too, so we can't, you know, it's not like San Antonio is an average two seed of the West. I mean, they're any other year we'd be talking about how great of a year San Antonio's having.
I know.
It's pretty crazy out West.
I want to ask you this one thing, Clay, and we'll probably hop off here in just a minute. The San Antonio Spurs were set to take on the Oklahoma City Thunder Saturday night, primetime on ABC. And Saturday morning, Greg Popovich announced that he's going to sit everybody. LaMarcus Aldridge, Tim Duncan, Kawhi Leonard, everybody. I mean, it was everybody. Nobody played. Manu Ginobili, nobody played worth watching. So I'm asking as a fan, Clay, you bought tickets in advance. San Antonio Spurs are having one of the best seasons in franchise history. And this could be one of the last chances you get to see Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Ginobili, all on the same floor together. As a fan, what do you think about them doing that late, pulling people off the court? Just, you know, it's the right decision as a coach to rest guys for the playoffs, but as a fan, how much does that bother you?
Yeah, that would suck if you bought those tickets. But They just gave him a rest. Was it off of a back-to-back or something?
Yeah, they just it was one of those situations where they needed rest from having an outstanding week, by the way.
Yeah, they're an old team, so it's understandable. But, yeah, I'm sure that wasn't a cheap ticket. Yeah.
However, you still got to see Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook.
Yeah. what was the score? Was it that Oklahoma put on that?
Yeah, they beat him by like 20-something.
That figures. Poppy knows what he's doing. I think San Antonio fans are educated. They're a lot like Oklahoma City fans. You know, it's a small market. You know, they're smart. They know their basketball. They might have been a little upset at first, but they know it's for the best of the team, I think.
Well, Clay, next week we'll have our championship matchup set. The Final Four is this Saturday, guys. May your team, if they're left in there, a lot of people from Syracuse have their team in there. Hope they have a fantastic run. I hope we have some great matchups this week in the Final Four. And, Clay, we will see everyone next week on the next week's Sports Report. Thanks so much, Clay, for jumping on and fighting through all the pain this week and doing the show with me today.
No problem, brother. No problem.
Remember, you can check out replays of each and every show on SoundCloud, Audio Boom, and iTunes as well. Just subscribe and download each and every show there in iTunes. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week on the Sports Report.